Okay, and it's time for another 13 o'clock movie retrospective.
Yeah, this one's going to be Excalibur.
Yes.
Good film.
Well, it's weird because we had kind of forgotten all about this one. Why did we even think about this? I don't even remember.
I don't know. I was just trying to think of some really cool movies that we saw when we were kids that I remembered as having good quality.
Yeah.
And being kind of influential.
Yeah.
Back in those days. It was a good British film called Excalibur.
I remember seeing this one. Like, I had seen it on cable as a kid. The last time I saw it was in my high school English class.
Yeah.
In 1990, I guess it was. It was probably my senior year.
I think the last time that I had seen this would have been, oh man, mid-80s.
Yeah.
I remembered it being really cool and looking really good. And I even remembered the music from it, you know, the Wagner.
Yeah.
It had stuff from like the Nibelung, you know, some of the songs having to do with Siegfried and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was as I remembered it. It looks good.
It's weird because the only thing I remembered from the last time I saw it was the bird eating that dude's eyeball out.
Yeah, and that looked like a real eye. That was probably a sheep's eye stuck in a plastic skull with hamburger in there.
Probably.
The way that crow was,
kind of his nose too. It was I was like, I remembered it being gory because I remember liking that about it.
Yeah, it's pretty disturbing.
But it's still
a creepy scene. All the dead.
I've forgotten how creepy and horror movie esque some of those scenes are.
Yeah, the movie is not one of these upbeat Hollywood flicks, you know, about hey, we're knights on the backs of horses, you know, look at my shiny armor. No, it's not really like that. The whole thing plays kind of like a horror film.
It does, yeah. Some of the
it's eerie
some
and
of
dark.
The framing and stuff like that is kind of like
even
a horror
in the very beginning, you know, the birth of Arthur. Maybe we should just back up. What year was this movie made?
This was made in 1981.
Director?
And it was directed by John Borman, who, fun fact, also directed Zardoz.
Yeah, which that's a bunch of awesomeness
right
there.
With Sean Connery being very furry.
Zardoz.
In his
Wizard of Oz.
What would you call that?
Some kind of
Speedo contraption?
Yeah, he's wearing a Speedo through the whole thing, Sean
and
Connery.
And he looks like he's wearing a bath mat of pubes.
Yeah.
Hairy.
When you see this movie, you can't believe that's Sean Connery in it.
Yeah.
Well, that's another movie, though. We'll talk about Zardoz at another time.
But it's the same director.
Yeah.
But it's not really anything like Zardoz.
No.
I mean, this one's
this one's actually kind of like a heavy. The weird thing about this movie is that the movie is written well. It's very fast-paced. It's kind of long. It's the story of Arthur. It's pretty much taken from, like, La Morte d'Arthur.
Yeah, Thomas Malory.
Yeah, and some of the other Arthurian legends. The dialogue all sounds like it was something out of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
See, the original stories of Arthur are usually written in poetic form.
Yeah.
So you can't really make a movie based on a poem. You have to make a screenplay.
Yeah.
And if you're going to make a screenplay, they can't sound like they're from California. So the best thing to do is to put dialogue in it sounds like it's something out of Shakespeare.
Yeah, because everyone will buy that.
Yeah, they'll buy that. And there's no such thing as Arthurian music, so what you do is you use Wagner.
Yeah.
Which, you know, something out of the Nibelung, who was stories about Siegfried, which is, I guess you can say Siegfried is almost kind of like the German Arthur, even though he's a demigod, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
It works good. It looks like you're seeing something that's very historical with a fantasy tinge to it.
Yeah.
Not as fantasy, I would say, as, say, Lord of the Rings or anything like that.
Yeah.
It looks kind of historically accurate. Not really. The armor they're wearing is Renaissance armor.
Well, now, evidently, the director says he did that on purpose.
Yeah, because that's when La Morte d'Arthur was written.
Yeah, because he said, I wanted like anachronistic kind of stuff in there.
Yeah.
So it couldn't be tied down to one time period.
Right.
And it was more mythic and stuff like that. Yeah, because it's supposedly set during the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
But then there's a bunch of Renaissance shit.
Yeah, that's Renaissance. It looks like Renaissance, but the story's being told about something happening in the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
And during the Dark Age England, during the time when Arthur could have existed or supposedly existed, British soldiers then would have been Roman soldiers, or at least wearing gear that looked like something out of a Roman legion.
Yeah.
During that time. You know, they didn't have big plate mail.
Yeah, and because that's what they were wearing in this, like, super shiny plate mail armor.
Yeah.
You know, and it is very Renfest looking.
Now, the pacing of the movie is very quick.
Yeah.
But seeing it now, I see that the transitions and the edits are very abrupt. So the movie is edited for an audience that already knows this story.
That's what I'm assuming. That's kind of the feeling I got.
If you don't know the story of Arthur, sometimes it may not click. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, that's right. At least 10 years have passed by the, you know.
Right.
There is no sense of the passage of time.
Well, and interestingly, kind of what I read about this. Now, evidently, the original screenplay was like 3+ hours long. Oh, no, the kitten is in here.
No, she's getting right in the microphone.
Kitten attack.
Okay.
Go away, Otterbox.
All right.
Okay. So the original screenplay was like 3+ hours long, right?
When I saw this on HBO as a kid, there was an intermission, in the theatrical.
Remember, back in the old days, in theaters, if a movie, like a 15, I think if it was over 2 hours.
It was like a 15-minute intermission.
Yeah.
On TV.
Well, we didn't have which is funny.
We didn't have a
pause it.
We didn't have a pause button back then.
So it's like some people might have to go to the bathroom at this point or go make a sandwich or something.
Make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah.
Sandwich.
A sandwich.
Well, like it's in America, it's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Yeah.
Toasted.
There's no D or W.
With some peanut butter, with some bananas on it.
Oh, no.
Elvis style.
I don't go that far.
Elvis style.
I don't like bananas.
Okay.
But anyway, so the original screenplay was like over 3 hours long and all the students were like, yeah, no. And so the version that they ended up making, now the version that we got on Blu-ray, which is the generally seen like R-rated version, was what, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, something like that.
Yeah, and it goes pretty quickly though.
Now there's also a PG version that was shown on like regular TV that is shorter. So I can imagine.
Yeah, because there's a scene where Uther's just bearing down on, what was her name?
What is that character's name?
He was just working her
Arthur's
over.
Arthur's mom.
Yeah, Arthur's mom. He was working her over, and Uther's wearing his plate mail.
And another fun fact, the actress that played Arthur's mom and gets railed by Uther is the director's daughter. I said that must have been an awkward day on the set. Yeah.
So Dario Argento was into that.
That's what Dario Argento and Asia Argento kind of shit happening there. That's a little creepy.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's how they do in Europe, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the thing that I noticed about this, like I said, other than the gore, I didn't really remember much about it. Like, I remember being gory and I was like, that was really cool because I was into that kind of shit. Well, still into that kind of shit. But I didn't really remember much about the story other than, it was about King Arthur kind of stuff. One thing I've forgotten is that this movie is very, I think the word I used was episodic.
Okay.
It's not like a real, it has a narrative, like this happens because of this and then this happened because of that.
Yeah.
But there's really no, it doesn't flow smoothly.
No,
is what
it's
I'm
kind
saying.
Of a mess in a way.
Yeah, it's kind of like scene, this happens in this scene,
then this scene
like 10 years later, scene 10 years later,
yeah.
Ten, you
and
know,
there's no sense of a transition or the passage
really.
Of time.
And they don't really tell you, like, you know, which I guess is okay. Like, you kind of figure it out.
Me being a white boy, you know, with a fucking Anglo-American background, the shit just speaks to me on an ethnic level. Okay. I understand the story, you know. I understand the story. I grew up with the story, you know. I understand the Christian symbolism and the Germanic overtones in a Saxon-type story, you know, coming from, you know, Camelot and all that crap. I don't know if a foreign audience, like, say, somebody from India, I don't know if they would actually understand this movie. Because sometimes 10 years has passed from one scene to the next. I'd like to hear somebody from the audience. I mean, does this movie speak to them? I don't know. Because I've seen some very traditional movies, you know, that came from places like India or Persia, like Persian tales. And I see them, I kind of understand the story, but a good example would be like the Russian story. What was the name of that Russian story with the witch?
Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga. That's what I was talking about. I can see a story about Baba Yaga. I can understand the story, but it doesn't have a cultural impact on me.
Well, yeah, because you didn't grow up in that culture.
I didn't grow up in the context. So I don't know if somebody from India, if this is an effective movie that they can.
So yeah, like you understand what's going on, but it doesn't resonate with.
Doesn't
you
resonate.
Way.
You don't have a cultural context.
Yeah. Another thing I kind of wonder about this movie is that it has it kind of makes a lot of the Christian symbolism pretty overt.
Yeah.
Fairly overt toward the end,
especially at the concept of the Holy Grail, when Percival finds the Holy Grail and he's asked the riddle of the Grail.
Yeah.
And basically what the riddle of the Grail amounts to is, I accept theocracy. Basically. That the king, the land, and the Lord
are all
the same thing. Kind of like a recreation of the Holy Trinity, but in a government sense. That the king is God.
Yeah.
And that the land is the king and the king is God. It's a theocracy.
Yeah. And there is like a lot of, it's almost kind of like a conflict, which even though Merlin is kind of, he's not really portrayed as a good guy, but he's not portrayed as a bad guy either. He's kind of a neutral character.
Yeah, well, he's like portrayed as a relic from the
that's pagan past. That's what I'm saying. It's like a pagan Christian dichotomy going on. He's kind
of ceremoniously retired in the tale in favor of the new Christian era.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
Now, here's something that I didn't exactly pick up on. We were watching it, but I saw it in a review that I read later, was that the birth of Mordred, who is Arthur's son by Morgana, because she's the witch and she disguises herself. Didn't she disguise herself as Guinevere?
Yeah.
And, you know,
to steal Arthur's seed.
To steal Arthur's seed, like you do. Those tricksy women.
Yeah, there's some weird inbreeding and incest.
There's a lot of incest going on in this movie.
And shit. Has
an alarming amount of incest. Yeah, well, any amount of incest is alarming, I guess. Right. But yeah.
And it was all portrayed as part of like black magic.
Yeah.
And you know.
Yeah, because they could all like put glamours on themselves and make themselves look like
other people.
Someone else. So yeah, so that's how that happened. So the birth of Mordred represented the point at which the land started to decay.
Right.
Because you know how Arthur started, his hair started getting gray, all his knights of the round table started like infighting, and there was all this shit going on. Then Lancelot and Guinevere started fucking.
Yeah.
And then like everyone in the land started to starve and like their crops failed and stuff like that. So the symbolism there was that Mordred was like the representation of this sin that caused everything to go to shit.
Yeah, the funny thing is about Excalibur is it's a very Christian influenced tale.
It is, yeah.
But the weird thing is there's nothing Christian about the tale. Nothing. No. It's actually just very, it's very pagan. It's very warrior. It's a warrior's interpretation of Christianity.
Yeah.
And once a warrior starts interpreting Christianity, he's going to interpret it the way he wants to interpret it. Not much Christianity left.
Yeah.
About kicking ass in the name of shit, name of God. You know, that's what basically.
And I feel like they're not really talking about God. They're talking about, yes, there are some parallels between Arthur and I guess he's kind of like a God-like figure or a Jesus-like figure, but really, other than them going to get the Holy Grail, and I think in one scene, there's like kind of a Jesus-y looking Shroud of Turin-y type of thing, like behind him on the wall.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Other than that, it's not really a lot of
no. Now, if you guys like Star Trek and you're into those Klingons, it kind of reminds me of the way the Klingon operas were described.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, the thing is, like, the guys had honor.
Yeah.
But only to a point.
Yeah. You have
to. You know what I mean? There was this whole kind of thing where, you know, like Lancelot was supposed to be like the purest one or whatever. And then he still ended up betraying Arthur, his best friend.
When you analyze the movie's being based upon writings of Renaissance educated Christians talking about basically a pre-Christian era.
Yeah.
And their noble ancestors before they were Christians and the emergence of the first Christian king.
Yeah.
Which is Arthur. And this is a very popular tale. There was no King Arthur. It's a very popular tale in what is now France and England.
Yeah.
The original, or actually La Mort d'Arthur, the one this is based upon, was from France, probably Brittany.
Yeah.
Or Saxony or some.
I mean, the stories had been floating around for a lot older than that, but I feel like that the Thomas Mallory version kind of codified a lot of the stuff that people think of as Arthurian legend nowadays. Now, some of the stuff that was put in the movie, like there was the whole Excalibur being the same as the Sword in the Stone, which some versions, and I don't think in La Mort d'Arthur, I don't think that the Sword in the Stone and Excalibur were the same sword, but some versions of the tale, they are the same sword.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I feel like that's kind of a nitpick that a lot of people have going, it's not the same. Which, what,
in the story that I, in the version I remember, Arthur pulls the sword from the stone. That proves that he was king.
Right. Yeah.
But then later on, the Lady of the Lake gives him
Excalibur. See, that's what I thought too.
And then
that's
he gives
a
Excalibur back at the very end so he can finally give up the ghost and die.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I feel like if you're going to make a movie out of it, though, that's probably the best thing to do is to kind of just like match those two. Because otherwise you're going to have this sword, that sword. It's like confusing, you know what I mean? Because you really only need one sword as the MacGuffin of the movie.
Right.
And you know what I mean? So it doesn't have to be two things. But honestly, one of my favorite scenes in this is, well, one, when Arthur first realized, but that's one thing that happens is that he's kind of a teenager still, where he's supposed to be, even though the actor's 35, because they use the same actor for Arthur the whole time, like from teenager, 20s, old man.
Yeah, they age him.
But he, you know, he did a good job. So he pulls the sword out, and they're like, oh, well, you're king now. And then, like, all the knights are like, some of the knights are like, fuck that, and then some of the knights are like, oh, okay, fair enough. And then, so they, well, hey. And then... this kitten is like, she's very rambunctious. You know, so they start to fight. And I like the scene where the one knight that's the main, and I can't remember his name, the blonde one, where he is the most fuck this. He's not my king, whatever.
Right.
But then he is going to like my favorite scene.
Yeah.
Because I like that Arthur was kind of like.
Yeah, he nut checked me. Yeah, you're right. I'm not the king. Remember that?
Yeah. Well, it's because he
wasn't a knight.
Yeah.
I'm confusing the issue.
No, but also I think that was why they started to respect him then, because he's like, I have the faith. I'm going to like sit here and I'm going to, you could cut my head off if you wanted to.
Right.
But I'm going to trust you.
I'm not sure we gave the audience enough background to understand what it is we're talking about. But,
well, like I said, at the beginning, when Arthur is first, he's just a teenager, he pulls a sword from the stone. And like I said, then some of the knights want to follow him and some don't.
Yeah. So well, they started to wage a war over who was really king.
Right. Yeah.
And Arthur did defeat his main opponent.
Yeah.
But his opponent said, I would never serve you because you're not even a knight.
Yeah.
And he said,
do you even lift, bro?
Yeah.
Do you
even knight, you're not even a knight. And he says, you're right, I'm not a knight, so I can't be the king. And he gave him Excalibur. He says, unite me.
Yeah.
And then I could be your king.
And then he knelt down.
The dude could have killed him.
Yeah, he could have killed him.
And he went, yeah, right. Yeah, and he knighted him.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's almost kind of like, so I don't know if it was Arthur's faith that he wouldn't kill him.
I think it was his faith in goodness.
Yeah, or because it's almost like, because the knight that's holding Excalibur almost kind of goes, whoa, like he's shaking it, like it's possessing him or some shit.
I don't think it was.
Yeah, but it's maybe that's what he was trying to do.
I think he was realizing that it was like a very awesome moment.
Yeah.
Like something historical was happening. He did have Excalibur in his hands.
Yeah.
And a guy handed Excalibur over to him, handed it over to him. It's like a guy trusted him enough to hand Excalibur over to him. You know what I mean? He had Excalibur in his hands.
Yeah.
He could have killed the king and taken it for himself, but he didn't. So he figured that this guy must be really worthy and knighted him.
Yeah. And the fact that he had enough respect for that guy that he trusted him.
He trusted him to be to do the honorable
that,
even thing.
Though that guy was conflicted and didn't want him to be king. You know what I mean?
You're going to have to cut the cat out. Too much cat action.
Oh, it's funny. Poor kitty. Yeah. She's like, what? I'm just trying to be in the show.
Yeah. All right.
But that scene I think was really well done. And also the scene where Arthur is first meets Lancelot and they're fighting.
Right.
And then Arthur everybody knows the Arthurian legends. We're not spoiling anything.
Well, we have some people that are not from Western countries.
Well, true. But I mean, the scene where he fights Lancelot and uses Excalibur, he kind of cheats, is what I'm saying. You might as well just let her in because she's...
Cat is trying to claw.
She's,
her way in.
See, we...
Didn't she open the door? She got the door.
She's so smart.
Yeah.
We can't... You can't, like, keep her out of anything. Yeah. She figured out how to...
She's like a raccoon.
Yeah. And she's only half size. She's still only half height.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that scene of Arthur and Lancelot fighting where Arthur kind of cheated, but then he kind of like owned up to it. It's like, yeah, I cheated. And it's like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So he got the sword back is all I'm saying. But yeah, like I said, it's visually, it is like beautiful. It's a beautiful movie. It was actually, the whole thing was shot in Ireland. So it's all like on location and it's like super, super gorgeous.
The locations are very nice.
Yeah.
The movie visually really does stand up.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, if it wasn't for the editing and the transitions from one scene to the next, this movie could be the perfect Arthur movie.
Yeah.
This is the only movie about King Arthur I'd recommend.
Yeah. And like I said, you got to think too, one, it was 1981. Two, you have to think a lot of these are Shakespearean actors, stage actors.
Yeah, so the acting's very good.
So the acting is good, but it's very theatrical, let's say that. It's very stagey.
It's a very British movie, and it
Although, the guy that plays Merlin, I think, is the most awesome.
Yeah.
Like, he's super, super funny.
The movie kind of has a feel of almost kind of like a, I don't want to say Hammer horror movie. More like a Sinbad movie.
Yeah.
You know, like the scary Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh my God, I love Sinbad.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, but no stop motion.
Yeah.
Of course, it's all live action.
Yeah.
It looks really good. The armor's really nice.
Yeah.
It looks like really cool armor.
Yeah, all the costumes and stuff are really cool.
And they're wearing it throughout the entire movie.
Yeah, clanking around, like in the water and stuff. You can tell, it's like, man, this shit is so heavy.
Yeah, some of the guys, their armor's rusting pretty badly
towards
the end when they start searching for the Grail.
Yeah. And the cool thing, too, is that this movie was almost kind of like sort of the first big movie for a lot of really iconic British actors. You got your Patrick Stewart. You got Helen Mirren, who plays the evil witch, Morgana. You got Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
This was kind of his first
major
role. Yeah. And it was weird because we first saw him in the movie and I didn't really remember him being in it. And I was like, Tom's like, that looks like Liam Neeson. I'm like, no. Because from some angles, it didn't.
Yeah.
And he had that weird like man bun thing going on. And I was kind of like, I didn't think it was. But then when I heard him talk, I was like, yeah, that's totally him. And that dude, I can't remember the name of the dude that played Merlin. Nicol Williamson, the guy that played Merlin, he was in a shit ton of movies after that, too. And, you know, so there was just, like, tons and tons of people that were in this that went on to much
The movie looks really good. It's got a really good feel to it. I'd put it right underneath Conan 1.
Yeah. And it's a similar kind of thing. Like I said, the editing of it, I don't know if I'd call it the editing, but something like that. It's a little jarring.
Yeah.
Because it covers a lot of ground in a very short time.
Yeah.
And it kind of assumes familiarity with the source material.
Like I said.
So, like, if you don't really know, I mean, it's not that you couldn't follow it exactly.
You have to pay attention.
But you really have to pay attention to, like, every word they're saying.
If you don't know this story.
If you don't know the Arthurian legends.
Right.
Because they cover a lot of shit.
Right.
And
I remember we were first watching it, and we were, like, 15 minutes into it. I'm going, God damn, this thing's covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, it's, like, it's fucking...
Because I hadn't seen it since I was a kid, and I didn't realize how fast-paced this movie was. And it's a long, fast-paced movie.
Yeah, well, because basically you're going from
they had to cover
Arthur's
a lot of
conception.
Right, yeah, who his dad was.
Yeah, because the whole part with Uther Pendragon and all that at the beginning, and then, you know, him, like, disguising himself as some other dude so he could go fucking lady and mess up a whole truce that he just...
Yeah.
Did. I mean, he did the truce.
And how he got the sword out of the stone.
Yeah.
How he fought his way into becoming king once he got it.
Yeah.
How he made the round table. How he met Lancelot.
Yeah.
Then it went on to how Camelot got screwed up.
Yeah. And that was like a long part of the movie. Yeah.
How they met, how Lancelot met Parsifal.
Parsifal, yeah.
And how Parsifal actually became a knight.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And then what kind of knight Parsifal ended up being.
He's
kind of the sensitive one, really.
Yeah.
And then how...
How everything started going to shit.
Going to shit because,
with Morgana and Mordred being born. And then Mordred growing up.
And then how he put all the knights of the round table on the Grail quest.
Yeah. And that took a long time.
Yeah. And then how and why Parsifal was the only one that actually found the Grail and brought it back.
Yeah.
And then how... Arthur was able to use the Grail to rejuvenate himself and get the land back together so he could fight his evil son and overcome him. And then how Arthur died and how the sword was returned to the Lady of the Lake to wait for the next British
leader
to save England.
It took you almost as long to just give that brief synopsis as the movie. I meant that, like, you'd, like, just saying that, I was like, wow, I'm tired just thinking about all that. Yeah. Was that the movie is crammed full of plot.
Yeah.
Shit happens.
The good thing about it is that it's never boring.
No, it doesn't linger.
No.
It doesn't fuck around on any one point. It's just kind of like, we got this, let's go on to the next thing.
The only wasted space in this is a brief interlude of Arthur meeting his wife.
And there's really not much of that.
There's not much of it.
No.
But that's the only scenes in this that aren't kind of action-oriented.
Yeah.
Now, his sister, Morgana.
Yeah, half-sister.
His half-sister, Morgana. Frodo Gothatyr. I mean, she looks very like gothy looking. Very gothy looking. I could, from that point on, all gothic chicks kind of looked like that for many years.
I have to say that Helen Mirren, that that metal breastplate thing she wears, that's fucking rad.
Yeah, she's wearing fishnet, black fishnets, and
yeah,
and the hair and everything. It was a pretty gothic look.
And she was all up in Merlin's business, wanting to learn the magic, black magic, and all that shit.
Talking to the dragon. What was that language they were speaking? It was middle.
No, it was Old Irish.
Old Irish.
The charms they were using, well, sort of. It was kind of like a bastardized Old Irish. Because when I was first watching the movie, and the black magicians like Merlin and Morgana were doing the charm of making.
Yeah.
Which sounds kind of dirty, actually. But like the way they were saying it, I was like, that sounds kind of like Welsh. But it's actually Old Irish, which I guess is a sort of related.
Yeah.
So it is sort of a real language, and it does kind of mean something. It's something about a dragon or whatnot. But like I said, the whole thing about Merlin is that even though he's portrayed as like he teaches her how to do black magic and shit like that, but he's not really a bad guy. I mean, he's not really a good guy either.
Right.
Like I said, he's a very ambiguous character.
Right.
But I think the guy that plays Merlin, I think he kind of steals the movie.
Right. I would like to ask somebody who from a non-Western country to watch this movie and give us a report whether or not they can follow it, what they think of it. Maybe somebody from India.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I'd like to see what they say.
I'm always kind of curious about how people that are raised in one culture like perceive other cultures' mythology.
Yeah.
And I mean, even though we're Americans, I mean, obviously, you know, most of us came from Europe at some point in the past. So, you know, the Arthurian legends are kind of like our sagas.
Yeah, we grew up with them over here too.
Our mythology. Yeah. It would be interesting. But yeah, I definitely think this is probably the best. They don't make a lot of King Arthur
If they movies. Do a King Arthur movie nowadays, it's something lame.
Yeah.
Although I know that they made one recently. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But it couldn't have been good if we've heard about it.
Think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll check as it far out. As I know, I'm not going to shit on something if I haven't
seen it. As far as I know, this is the go-to Arthur movie.
And I remember liking this very much when I saw it on cable. Like I said, mostly because it was gory.
It was a hit. I remember everybody knew about it when it came out.
Well, it was played over and over again. Well, when it came out in theaters, it was like the number one movie for quite a while.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it was 1981. Well, what else did we have to choose?
The movie looks cool.
It really does.
It looks cool. It's a cool story.
And, you know, we have it on Blu-ray now, and it really does look beautiful, the backgrounds.
Yeah, the music's like fantastic.
Yeah. And like I said, a lot of the gore and like with the hitting each other with axes and maces and shit like that, that shit looks real.
Yeah.
It looks like they're really beating the shit out of each other.
I'll tell you what, there's that one scene, I think they kind of ruined it. And that was when Arthur broke his sword on Lancelot's breastplate.
Yeah.
Remember that? And he threw Excalibur back in that little pond.
Yeah.
Or I guess it was a little stream.
Yeah.
And he turned his back on it and he's bitching at Merlin. You know, Merlin's like, oh, you done it now. You fucked up now. You broke his
tower. Smooth move, Arthur.
And in the background, you see the Lady of the Lake in the background behind him, just right underneath the surface of the water. It looks so eerie.
It's very spooky looking.
It looks like a corpse.
Yeah.
Down just underneath the surface of the water, and it's bringing the sword up to him. Now, when he turns around, they show the next shot is you see, like, a camera angle of them looking down into the water, and she's very obviously superimposed into the water.
Yeah.
I think it ruins that shot. They never should have directly showed the Lady of the Lake.
It would have been way creepier if you had never seen her face.
Right. Just that, at a slight distance, just that body underneath the surface with the sword coming up out of the water. They never should have showed a close-up.
Because I like the whole mystery of, like, what the fuck is she doing in there? Why does she have that sword? What is this about?
She's the Lady of the Lake.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
She guards Excalibur.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's like, because most of the movie, they just kind of showed her hand sticking up with the sword in it or something like that. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. They probably shouldn't.
They should have never showed a close-up of her face.
Even if they'd have looked down at her, her hair just should have been in her face, or you couldn't see her or something like that. That would have been a lot creepier.
Yeah, and it should have been a real woman or at least a mannequin underneath the water.
Yeah.
That's not what they showed. They showed a woman who was high and dry, superimposed over some water.
Yeah.
Over the surface of the water. It didn't look real.
Yeah.
She looked like she was, you know, out of a damn shampoo commercial. You know what I'm about? I would have liked it.
Garnier Fructis.
Yeah, I would have liked it better if
the lady of the lake.
The Lady of the Lake, basically, when you see the Lady of the Lake, how she's portrayed, she's basically a Valkyrie.
Yeah.
Okay, something real similar. They should have left it where you could only kind of see her at a distance under, and she never came out of the water.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? And it was something kind of scary.
like Samara from The Ring. Yeah. With her hair just hanging out.
Wouldn't you
face.
Be freaked out if there was a woman that fucking just appears That's out of the water and gives a sword?
Here,
and
for God you.
God damn. And then
what
she
the
vanishes.
Fuck? I don't want that.
It would be a ghostly apparition. Yeah. So it shouldn't have been a pleasant vision from heaven. It should have been something disturbing, I think. Yeah. Not ugly, but just eerie.
Yeah, like know? Creepy.
Like, oh.
Yeah.
Damn.
Now
I'm, that's the way it would be.
Now I'm imagining the whole that? King Arthur thing like totally redone as a creepy horror movie.
Well, it was creepy the way it was done. Think yeah. about it. And there was only, they had light spots, but the whole first half of the movie with Pendragon, you know,
yeah.
or Uther, that was a very dark
yeah.
scene. You
yeah.
know? I remember that. Basically raped the woman.
Basically. Well, yeah. Well, not basically. He did, yeah. He because yeah. he was disguised as her husband.
Yeah.
So she didn't know who that fucker was.
And the
was.
Music, and it's all dark. It's at night, and you got all the fucking fire. And boom, boom. Boom, boom. That music.
Yeah.
Fucking badass. Those dudes stab each other.
Yeah.
Battle axes and shit.
And like I said, the whole sequence at the end with Percival looking for the Grail.
Yeah.
And then he finds all those knights hanging from the trees and the birds are eating them. And,
yeah.
And the shit, even the shit with Mordred, like in that fucking weird ass
armor
that he yeah. had, that it was gold and looked kind of like a cupid sort of.
Yeah. And he was getting it on with his mom, and his mom turned into an old lady because she used up all her magic. So he strangled her and threw her away.
Yeah, this is some fucked up shit.
Yeah,
they need some family therapy in Arthurian times.
It has a very satanic ending. You know, the,
yeah.
Arthur puts that shit to rest, man.
That's enough.
That's enough of that shit. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so I hope you enjoyed our rambling discussion of Excalibur.
Yeah.
The 1981 King Arthur epic.
The movie's still good to watch if you've never seen it. Get it on Blu-ray, or you can get it cheap on Blu-ray off of eBay.
That's what we did.
Yeah, watch it and get back with us. It's pretty good. I like it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot more than I remembered.
Yeah. I still like the opinion of somebody, say, like in India, of what they think of it. Somebody who's not familiar with the legend.
Yeah, just to see how...
If it translates. I want to know if
I want to know how easy it is to follow for somebody that isn't real familiar with that story.
Yeah, we can follow it because we know the story.
Yeah, we can fill in the gaps.
I don't think a person that really knows the story could follow it with that edit.
Probably not. Yeah.
Not easily. They'd probably have to pause it and go
back.
It's
kind of all over
the
place.
What happened? Yeah.
Like I said,
it's
crammed.
Yeah.
It's chock full of plot, is what it is.
It'd be like Baba Yaga, I think.
Well, you know what? Baba Yaga, that whole thing is so awesome. Russian mythology in general.
House have chicken feet.
The house has chicken feet.
And it turns.
But see, you just have to roll with it, man.
I can't roll with shit like that, bro.
Like...
Because, you know, I'm going to have to say, why does the house have chicken feet? Was it born with chicken feet? Is a house like that born? Or
is it
built?
Born with chicken feet? Or did someone put chicken feet on it?
Yeah.
I'm assuming that because it's Baba Yaga's house and she is a witch...
She made it
chicken feet for whatever reason. She has a chicken foot fetish, Baba Yaga. Right. And she's like, she likes chicken feet so much that she wanted her house to have
I saw that shit
feet.
When I was a kid, dubbed in English. And I was like, what the... Remember, they would sell those movies off to American companies back in the early 70s. And they would just show it to kids and it disturbed the hell out of us.
Well, that's why a lot
chicken
of...
Chicken feet scare the shit out of
That's why they had so much good stuff for MST3K. Because I know you guys who have listened to the show a lot probably know, but I'm a huge MST3K fan. Yeah. And the one they did of Jack Frost, like the Russian, the Russo-Finnish mythological movie they did about Nastinka.
Yeah.
And Baba Yaga was in that. She wasn't like the main character. And that was a man playing that witch too.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't tell.
Another one that they did to me when I was a kid.
But that was one of my favorite episodes.
They took one
that
of those,
shit was hilarious.
And they were beautiful Russian and Finnish movies, really.
Yeah.
You know, they were...
They're gorgeous to look
at. Beautifully done. They looked really good back in the day. But they would take them and then rename them and try to pass them off as something that they weren't. Like they gave one Russian one. It had a blonde guy and he had big fur coats. He's always up in the ice and he's sailing around and they're telling you that this is Sinbad.
They did that one on Mystery Science Theater
too. Yeah, and I'm going, Sinbad? Because, you know, I was old enough to have seen the Ray Harryhausen Sinbads.
It's like, that's not fucking
Sinbad.
That's
not fucking Sinbad. Who is Sinbad in the snow? What's up?
Sinbad don't have enough ass that white.
Yeah. Oh, that shit's funny. All right, I gotta go.
Anyway.
I'm shutting it down. That shit went over the line.
Take the kitten out. She's crawling around in that box and making noise.
All right.
All right, so that's our latest movie review. Hope you enjoyed our silliness and stuff about chicken feet. Remember to check out our Patreon and all that business. You can also give us a one-time donation on PayPal if you would like to. There's a link on the blog. And that'll do it for this movie retrospective. See you later.